Mrs. Robinson, Simon and Garfunkel. The time is 8 minutes past 10. And during this hour of my Sunday show, we invite an expert into the studio who is here to share his or her expertise in their field to help us navigate our lives, situations that we're dealing with, moves and shifts, whatever it might be. This hour is aimed to, or half an hour, whatever it ends up being, aims to sort of help us improve whatever it is that we are struggling with. So today we have Jo Travers, who is a nutritionist known as the London Nutritionist, which is a very catchy title for us, obviously. Hello, yeah. Jo. Good morning to you.
Morning.
Now, I did mention in my introduction your book, which is called The Low Fad Diet,
exactly.
As in fad,
yep.
Which immediately made me think, great, this is somebody who doesn't buy into any fads. And I would imagine that if you are a nutritionist, you would never enter into faddy thinking or looking at fads, would you?
Well, the trouble with the title nutritionist is that it's not actually regulated. So anybody can call themselves a nutritionist. So if you have an opinion about food and you want to pass it on to somebody, you could, in theory, just call yourself a nutritionist and do that. So not everybody is regulated in the same way that I am. So I'm a dietitian as well.
Right.
So I practice evidence-based nutrition. So where the evidence is, that's what I base my opinions on. And that's what I pass on to clients as well.
So in terms of looking at someone's diet, is there such a thing as a balanced diet? We hear that phrase so often. You need a balanced diet. You need a balanced diet. What does that mean?
Okay, so I would argue that the pertinent word in healthy balanced diet is actually balance, okay? So in theory, as long as you're getting the right nutrients in the right quantities, actually it doesn't matter so much about the healthy part. So if you want to live on McDonald's, for example, not that I recommend that at all, but you know, if you can get that mixture of carbs and vegetables and protein and good fats, actually that's fine. You don't the healthy part follows on from the balanced part. So really what it is, it's looking at how you get all of the right nutrients into your diet. If you're following a fad, like a kind of a juice detox, for example, there's no balance in that at all. You're getting is juice. There's no protein. And a healthy balanced diet is called a healthy balanced diet because it's healthy and balanced. And a juice detox isn't. Do you see what I said?
I do. So, for example, to know how much protein we need, is there a golden equation? Should it be a gram of protein for a kilo of your weight?
It's much, much easier than that.
Oh, good.
Really, I think what you should aim for is look at the size of your hand, okay? Your hands are really good because you always have them with you. And also if you're a giant, you have giant hands and you need giant portions. So it's a really good size. The other thing is that no matter what your weight status, if you're underweight or overweight, your hand doesn't really change shape much. So it's a really good guide to what your body needs to be a good weight, okay?
Right.
So a portion of protein is about the size of the palm and the thickness of your hand, yeah? So
thickness too?
Yep.
So that much cheese? No.
You need about two portions of protein a day, okay?
Okay.
So that would be meat, fish, beans, pulses, tofu, eggs, yeah, dairy products, those kind of things. Cheese is slightly different because it's quite high in saturated fat. So we aim for about a matchbox size, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of portions of protein is all you need. In the Western world, we easily get that most of the time. Might be if you were following a vegan diet or a vegetarian diet, you might have to concentrate a bit harder. But generally speaking, that's what you need protein-wise. Now, carbohydrates.
Yes.
So that's things like bread, pasta, rice, potatoes, those kind of things. That's a portion is about the size of your fist.
Oh, I had twice as much pasta as that last night.
And that's what most people do.
Yeah.
So often you might get four portions of pasta on a plate and a dollop of sauce. And then people complain that that pasta bloats them. It's not actually the pasta, it's the quantity.
Good point.
You need about five portions of carbohydrates a day, spread throughout the day. So if you're having, that works out to be about 1 to 1.5 portions per
meal. So I couldn't say that last night, because I had three times that amount, that was three of my five portions because I had it all in one go.
Because what you need to do is keep your carbohydrate level quite even throughout the day. And that means that you'll get a gentle undulation of blood sugar, no spikes or crashes. So when you have three portions of carbs in one go,
yes,
what can happen is it can push your blood sugar a bit too high. And then the body responds by to bring that blood sugar back down by releasing loads of something called insulin. And that causes a sugar crash. And most people have heard of that. And that can leave you tired and hungry and all sorts of things. But crucially, instead of using that carbohydrate, it can get stored around your middle as fat.
Right.
This is one of the crucial things. So if you're getting the balance right at mealtimes and not having too much, carbohydrates are brilliant. I mean, they've had a bit of a bad reputation.
All my years of dieting, yo-yo weight, whatever it's been, I've never had anybody put the nutrition on a plate in such simple terms. So your palm size and width in terms of protein twice in a day.
Yep.
A fist-sized portion of carbohydrate maybe five times a day?
Yeah, or you can split that up into about, so over the course of three meals, it'd be about 1 to 1.5 portion per meal, and then a bit extra for snacks. And in combination with these hand-sized measures, also we've got a handful of veg or fruit, that's a portion, you need 5 of those a day.
Right.
Okay? And in combination...
But you can have more vegetables, can't you?
You can have more vegetables, definitely. Unless, of course, it's making you too full and then you're not getting enough carbs and protein.
Right. Okay? This is such common sense.
And also, if you think at mealtimes of your plate and you split it into three and you fill half of your plate with veg or fruit or a mixture of the two, a quarter with carbohydrates and a quarter with protein, you can be pretty sure you're getting the balance right. So taking that back to the McDonald's thing we were just talking about, if you're getting a burger and chips, actually, that's probably 3/4 of the plate is carbohydrate and 1/4 protein and 0 veg.
Yeah.
If you add a salad or even at the very least get an orange juice and have an apple afterwards, then you've got that veg, skip the chips or skip the bread, and actually you've got the balance right. Does that make sense?
It does make total sense, although the idea of juice has become the devil to me.
Yes, of course it has.
Yes, because I just believe it's full of sugar and...
It is full of sugar, but it's also full of loads of other really good things. So it's got loads of potassium in it and folic acid. Folic acid is something that's really lacking in lots of people's diets.
But this is presuming you have got a freshly squeezed juice. You can't just buy something out of a carton then, can you?
You can buy something out of a carton. And although the nutrient content does decrease with time, actually you're still getting some. So you don't have to think of juice as bad at all. It can complement a healthy, balanced diet. And actually people that drink juice tend to get more portions of fruit and veg in their diet.
Right. Now, I've got loads of questions for Jo. If you've got some, you better hurry up and get them in. Otherwise, I am going to take up all this time. The number to dial if you have questions about your healthy lifestyle, what you're eating, what you're putting into your body, 0207 224 2000. If you've got queries, something that you've heard about that you want to run by Jo, she's a dietitian, a nutritionist. She really knows her stuff. That's what she's here for. You can also email Nikki, N-I-K-K-I at bbc.co.uk. Can we talk about the new thinking that has emerged and seems to be a buzzword now? And that's about the gut being your second brain, the microbiome. I even saw Michael Mosley discussing something like this, albeit in a slightly skimming the surface way. You know that show he does on the BBC.
Yep.
Kefir, for example, is a fermented yogurty drink.
Yeah.
I know certain cultures, Polish cultures, drink it a lot. It's much cheaper in a Polish shop, by the way, people, than in a health food shop, and it's just as good. What is that logic, and do you agree with it? Is it something we should all explore further?
Yes, in a way, although you don't have to have kefir in order to be healthy. So the idea that you feed the microbiome that live in your gut, so that's the bacteria that are living in your gut, if you feed them well, then they will multiply and continue to be really, really helpful. So there's a lot of research being done into the gut microbiome at the moment, and it seems like it might have an impact on gene expression and the immune system and all sorts of things like that. So it's really fascinating, really, really interesting. We still don't know a massive amount about it. But if you have a good balance of gut bacteria, that's thought to be a really good thing. Mm. And we do that by feeding it what it likes to eat. So some fermentation happens in the gut itself. So you eat food and the bacteria, you know, ferments it. And that's why some people find that when they eat beans, they end up with wind.
Yes.
So those kind of, but actually, that's not a bad thing because that's keeping that bacteria alive and keeping it going. Yeah.
So what's the difference between a prebiotic and a probiotic? Or are these just marketing terms thrown at us to make us buy more products and convince us we're doing good for ourselves?
in a simple way of explaining it, a probiotic is something that you take which is actually the bacteria.
Okay? Right.
So you might get a complex of bacteria, lots of different types. You take that, it gets through your stomach and into your through your digestive system, into the colon, where it starts to live. Okay, and that's a probiotic. A prebiotic is something that feeds those bacteria.
So can you give me an example of a probiotic food or drink and then a prebiotic one?
Yeah, so a probiotic drink, you can get things like in the supermarkets, you can get Yakult or Activia.
Full of sugar though, aren't they?
Well, some of them are, some of them are sugar-free. Mm. They tend to just have one or maybe two strains of bacteria in them though.
Right.
And so they're not necessarily that great. Mm. I mean, there's nothing to say they're going to do you any harm at all. But actually, when we talk about populating the gut in a kind of meaningful way, you might want to take something a bit stronger with a few billion.
So like a glass of kefir or some yogurt with a really good culture.
Yeah, so that you can also buy from good chemists and online lots of different really good quality probiotics that have loads of research behind them. And always, I would say, usually get one that's you can keep in the fridge, because if you keep it in the fridge, then that's a good sign that there's quite a good quality to it.
Okay.
Yeah? And then a prebiotic would be something that you would feed that bacteria. So even something as simple as bananas or beans, all those kind of things help. So you digest them, and the bits that you can't digest get eaten by the bacteria in your gut. That's basically it.
I see. Well, that's a really simplistic and wonderful, I mean that in a complimentary way of putting it. So the idea of the no fad or low fad approach to life is that we just look at exactly what does work for the average human being. Obviously, there are going to be people who've got specific issues. Are there real no-nos? I mean, are you anti-refined sugar, for example? Do you?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
Because actually, there's not a great deal of evidence that sugar in small amounts does us any harm at all.
Yeah, but Jo, what's a small amount?
So the recommendations at the moment are around about 30 grams of sugar for an adult.
Okay, how many teaspoons of sugar is this? I'm just trying to figure out how I can work this in.
It's about 6 teaspoons, roughly. 5 or 6 teaspoons, I would say. So if you think about it from that perspective, actually, the main problem with sugar is that it gives us dental caries. So it causes us to get holes in our teeth. If you brush your teeth really well, you can prevent that from happening. If you eat 30 grams of sugar in one go, that's going to push your blood sugar up, and actually quite a lot of that is going to get stored. So sugar has a calorie, you know.
So if somebody's going out for their Sunday morning treat and they want a Danish pastry, a donut, something, a chocolatey treat, is there likely to be 30 grams of sugar in that?
It really depends. I mean, actually, if you look at some drinks have that much in.
Right.
So there's this big thing recently, I was asked to comment on these crazy milkshakes, which have masses of ice cream and cookies and all sorts of stuff. So if you were to have one of those, it would be a serious sugar hit.
Right.
And that is not a healthy way to eat sugar. If you want a bit of jam on your toast in the morning, it's absolutely fine. Don't panic about it. If you want to have, a can of Coca-Cola once in a while, it's not the end of the world. Where you should really think about sugar is how much you have regularly, what kind of contribution it makes in the context of your whole day. So are you eating loads of sugar? Could you cut down? You know, is there any changes that you could make? But don't panic about it.
And is there anything to be said for the substitutes for sugar? Like some people will have honey or maple syrup, raw honey being different from another honey, or xylitol, any of those?
So xylitol is slightly different because it's like a sweetener. So it does have a different effect when it goes into your body. So it doesn't raise the blood sugar in the same way.
So it's good. Better.
Well, nobody quite knows, to be honest.
Right.
I mean, but a combination of the two, as long as you're not having masses of it, but it can cause things like diarrhea if you have too much of it. So it's all about getting the moderation right, okay? Mm-hmm. So sweeteners can be brilliant. For example, in sugar-free squash that you might give to your kids, it's much better to get them to drink fluids and to make water more interesting so that they enjoy doing it. But actually, it's much better to do that with a sweetener than to have something that was really sugary all the time. So to use them both in moderation works perfectly, really. So it's not all about one or the other, or they're all bad or none of them are bad. It's kind of just like have a bit of moderation.
And alcohol?
Well, alcohol has all sorts of positive effects, but it also has these negative effects as well. So it can cause weight gain because there's quite a lot of calories in alcohol. Mm-hmm. It can cause hangover apart from anything else, and that can make us feel awful and can make us unproductive. But alcohol can also damage our liver. It can lead to things like heart disease and high blood pressure if we have too much of it. So again, it's all about moderation. If you want to have a glass of wine with dinner and you're sticking to within the 14 units a week, actually the chances of you having any negative effects from that are quite small. But if you have four glasses of wine and you fall over and break your arm, then obviously that's a problem.
So the other thing that we hear quite regularly and have heard consistently is that the Mediterranean diet is really one of the best ways of eating in the world. Yes. We don't live in the Mediterranean. Do we need a Mediterranean diet?
Yes. But the thing is, the Mediterranean diet is really just a catchy title for the healthy eating guidelines that we are given. And it's really boring because you should eat more fruit and veg. You should eat whole grains. You should have some oily fish. You should have nuts and seeds. And people have been saying this. Dietitians have been saying it. Doctors have been saying it. Everybody's been saying it for years. And people are bored of hearing it. But if you give it a title, the Mediterranean diet, actually, oh, right, we've got something that we can aim
also,
for.
Also, it
now
makes you think of sunny climes and whitewashed walls and azure oceans and seas, doesn't it?
Exactly. But there is a lot of evidence to say that that is a really good way of eating.
If you have got calls for Joe, we'll keep it in for about 10 minutes after the news. The number to dial, Lissy's on the phones this morning, is 0207 224 2000. If you are texting, the digits are 81333. You need to start your message with the word London to ensure it comes to me. You can also text, you can tweet us at BBC Radio London. You can find me, follow me, message me on Twitter. My timeline is open throughout the show. It's at Nikki Baidy. And if you use Facebook, we're facebook.com/BBC Radio London. And if you are emailing, it is simply Nikki, N-I-K-K-I at bbc.co.uk. Karaoke moment, Fantasy, Earth, Wind and Fire. It's Nikki Baddie on BBC Radio London. In the studio with me, I have dietitian and nutritionist Joe Travers, otherwise known as the London Nutritionist. And of course, just as we're running out of time, a flurry of questions have come in. So after we take the news and travel, we will be talking about whether the time you eat affects how your body uses food and whether it's a bad thing, for example, to eat your dinner at 10 o'clock at night and go to sleep. I think that thinking for years and years was probably that was a bad thing. Also, your best breakfast. What is the best way to start your day? Is it okay to skip breakfast? And also, a very specific question about a type 1 diabetic child. We will put all that to Joe in a moment and we'll be taking your calls. So if you do want to get your voice on the radio, you need to be quick. 0207 224 2000. Text 81333. Start your message with the word London. If you're emailing, I'm Nikki, N-I-K-K-I at bbc.co.uk. And of course, you can use social media. We're at BBC Radio London on both Twitter and on Facebook. The time is 10:30. Will Schindler has your headlines.
BBC Radio London.
He was so silly. He's like a little kid. Oh, come to my house. Come to my house.
Duncan Barks. London's late night radio phone.
She's trying to do the best for this country,
yeah,
isn't she?
Yeah, but not too early. She should have thought.
Sunday to Thursday from 10.
Well, you said you wanted to have a bit of a dust-up with some of your regulars.
Oh, I didn't know you wanted a dust-up.
Duncan Barks.
Certainly more than happy to challenge yours. Test your view if you're a regular caller and you would like to do so.
I think that John Bercow is standing up for Parliament and for democracy and for freedom.
Sunday to Thursday from 10.
People got misophobia over me. Some people would say that, wouldn't they? I'd go on too much sometimes.
Rubbish. No, if anything, they're going to have it over me, not you.
BBC Radio London.
The Mighty Barks on this station Monday to Thursday from 10 p.m. It's Nikki Baddie live with you until 11. We have pre-recorded the last hour of my show. You will hear Stephen K. Amos talking about his world famous tour. That's the name of the tour, not that he is world. Well, he is world famous too, I suppose. And coming up in this half hour, I will be talking to Emma Manton, who has organised an amazing afternoon next Sunday in order to support the UN Refugee Agency. But you've still got a few more minutes of our dietitian and nutritional expert, Joe Travers. So, Joe, here's a text that I will read out for you. Amazing advice from Joe. Carbs are our life these days. I'd love to know if she has any advice about the recommended amount of carbohydrate for a type 1 diabetic child. We carb count every meal for our 9-year-old, but are unsure how much carb is ideal. We know from trial and error that low carb equals fewer highs and fewer lows, but as she's growing and she's hungry, we don't want to limit her carbohydrate intake too much. Any advice? It's so complicated.
It is quite complicated. But also carbs, you're right, they're really, really important for a growing child particularly. It's difficult to say that there's a specific amount because everybody is different. And in that situation, I would really recommend that you go and talk to your diabetes team. So you'll have a diabetes nurse, you'll have access to a dietitian, and they can really help you work through those any problems that you're having. So you can collaborate together and they can give you one-to-one advice. But yeah, don't cut the carbs because even though it means less highs and less lows, actually a growing child really, really needs them.
Well, that they've already figured out, haven't they? Let's take a call from Ellen in Charlotte, North Carolina. Ellen, good morning from London. How are you?
Fine, fine. How are you?
We are exceedingly well. You've got a question about omega-3s.
Yes, yes. I was just wondering, for the nutritionist, do you recommend taking them every day? Like, I mean, I give my son the DHA one just for... school purposes. And I really think it works. It works wonders, I think. I mean, it do. And then the omega-3s, my sister wasn't feeling well this week, and I was taking care of her. And so basically I gave her a lot of what you were saying, the kefir and spinach. And I really think it made the difference. It broke her fever, and she started feeling better immediately. So I was just wondering, for some silly reason, I'm not taking them, and I probably should be. So what do you recommend that I take one every day?
With omega-3, it's really, like, there's lots of evidence to say that it helps in an inflammatory way. So when you have a low omega-3 intake, actually inflammation from things like stress or from cuts and bruises or anything like that tend to be higher. So an omega-3 can really help. However, if you are getting lots of oily fish in your diet, or omega-3 eggs, or plenty of nuts and seeds, you may not need to take an additional one. So the recommendation is that you have maybe one or two portions of oily fish a week, or if you're not going to get that, you could take a supplement daily.
Well, I hope that's helped you, Ellen, and let us know how healthy you feel thereafter, won't you?
I will.
Have a very, very good day ahead. So the time you eat then, Jo, mm-hmm. is it important if you were to eat your dinner very late at night, say 10 p.m, we've often heard that you shouldn't eat after 7 and otherwise it all turns to fat, you don't burn it off. What's the truth in that?
So there's always infinite fine-tuning you can do to your diet, but really it's the big things that count. So if you don't get a balanced diet, eating late at night or not eating late at night and focusing on one of these tiny things is not going to make a jot of difference.
Right.
Okay? If you find that eating late at night stops you from sleeping properly, then don't do it. If you find that actually there's no problems at all, it's absolutely fine. Because the best thing to do often is something that fits in with our lifestyle. One of the recommendations about not eating after 7 actually comes from the fact that if you don't eat after 7, you may eat less in general. And that's one of the reasons that became a popular thing to do.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Nikki, can you ask Jo how many servings of carbs we should have a day if it's broken up during the day? Porridge, soya milk, nuts and berries, best breakfast. So Sharon's answering my other question, which is the best breakfast to have. Servings of carbs during the day, we did address this at the beginning. Do you want to just repeat that for us?
So it's about between 4 and 6 fist-sized portions a day. So when you're thinking about potatoes, a fist-sized pile of potatoes. Same with rice. Same with oats as well in the morning. So if you're having porridge for breakfast, make it about a fist size roughly, or a bit more if you're feeling hungrier, so that it adds up to about 5 a day. So between 4 and 6, depending on how active you are.
And just tell us, is there a perfect breakfast? If so, what is it?
A perfect breakfast is a balance of all the nutrients. So this morning I had cheese on toast with some cherry tomatoes, and it was lovely. It was the perfect breakfast for me because that's exactly what I wanted.
What sort of cheese and what sort of toast? Was it sourdough?
No, it wasn't. I make my own bread, which I'm not, just because I prefer it, not because I'm holier than thou.
Well, you are, but that's very good, because you should be in your position.
It was granary bread, so it had lots of seeds in it, and it was Taleggio cheese.
Lovely, so a bit of bluey cheese.
It was it was quite stinky cheese.
Oh,
it was really
gorgeous.
Nice.
John in Mill Hill, you've called to ask about cod liver oil. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nikki. Good morning, Joe.
Hello.
As a 60-year-old man with a chest condition, I take various mm-hmm. vitamin D and glucosamine and a multivitamin, garlic, etc.
Mm-hmm.
On the cod liver oil side, because I still do a sport, believe it or not, so I try and keep the joints going well, I've always taken the cod liver oil in capsule, but I was told recently, just the other week, that the oil is good, but the I presume it's gelatin that surrounds the oil isn't.
Okay, so I don't know if that's really a problem. I mean, there's not really that much wrong with the gelatin that surrounds it. It will just get broken down by your digestive system and, you know, so it's not a problem. There's nothing wrong with it.
Uh-huh.
One of the bits of advice, though, is did you say you take a multivitamin?
I do.
So one of the things with cod liver oil is because it's from the fish liver, it's really high in vitamin A. Vitamin A can build up in the body to a toxic level if you take too much of it. So if you've got vitamin A in your multivitamin and you're taking cod liver oil as well, it might be an overload. I don't mean to scare you at all.
But how would you know, Joe?
Well, it's difficult.
And what does it do, actually, vitamin A?
It is difficult to know. Vitamin A is really good for you. It's really, really important. But if you get too much of it, because it's a fat-soluble vitamin, you can store it in your body fat. So one of the things I would recommend is, instead of taking cod liver oil, just take a general omega-3. So it will just be called a fish oil rather than a fish liver oil. And then you're fine.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you for calling, John. And have a wonderful Sunday and rest of your weekend ahead. We've run out of time, Joe, but it's been an absolute delight to have you in the studios.
Thank you.
So your website is thelondonnutritionist.co.uk.
That's right. And you can find my book, The Low-Fad Diet, at thelow-fad.co.uk.
And is it stacked full of ideas of how we can eat in a balanced way?
Yeah, it's really, really practical. It's really good-humoured. It's really easy to access. And it's not very long either, because it doesn't need to be long. It's quite short.
Good.
And actually, this week it is free on Amazon Kindle, so Kindle Unlimited.
Great! The low-fad diet. Fad, F-A-D. Something we don't do on this show. Thank you so very much to Joe Travers. Coming up in a moment, Emma Manton will be in the studio with me to talk about a rather marvellous afternoon of entertainment next Sunday to raise money for the UN Refugee Agency.